Hi, and welcome back to another week of Trashy Divorces.
Lucky number seven.
Lucky number seven.
Lucky number seven, seventh episode.
My name is Stacy.
I'm Alicia.
And I am sitting here drinking wine out of a glass that I purchased at the Hampton Court Palace outside of London, England, that says drink like a queen on it. That was Henry VIII's summer palace. Like, you know more about this than I do.
Hampton Court was actually...
Was it his main palace? I don't know.
It got taken over. It was actually Wolsey's palace. And then Wolsey got axed because he couldn't give the...
Well, because he worked for Henry VIII. That's a lot like working for the Trump administration, except people actually ended up dead.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, we record this intro after we've recorded the episodes,
we do.
Which is why Stacy has gone to a very sad glass of wine.
My God, these are... Our theme this week is royals, and the stories we have for you...
And we're so glad we're not royals.
Are, no kidding, and you will be too, after you listen.
Too.
These are not happy tales. I think we all think of, you know, the fairy tale.
No, it's not the fairy tale.
It's never the fairy tale.
It is... I'm going to laugh.
Meghan Markle, you can always come home.
Duty. It's duty, but not Chandler being kind of duty, just... Legit, straight up duty, and if you take, God, that sounds so bad. If you take it or if you don't, because we have a story this week of duty absconded, duty abdicated.
You'll get it
absconded,
right.
Absconded and abdicated. Anyway, this week we're bringing you the hot trashy divorces of
Charles and Diana, probably the world's most famous trashy divorce, like in recent memory.
It's pretty famous.
Yours, though, goes back a generation. And
it
does.
To the greatest love story of the 20th century, which you think you know.
Has never been told, it turns out. Yeah.
It's Edward VIII abdicating, not absconding. I think it can be both.
It can be both.
His throne for the twice divorced American woman, Wallis Simpson.
Do you know what royalty absconds? Honeybee queens.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
They can abscond.
You got all kinds of news today. Huh? Wallis and Ernest Simpson, which was the divorce that had to happen for the greatest love affair, or was it?
Or was it? God, it wasn't. Spoiler.
So now we're drinking more, and we're going to edit this
shiz. My God. Hey, we appreciate you guys so, and lady, like, whatever. I'm sorry, I'm throwing gendered words. We appreciate you folks so much.
We really do. We have had a lot of... fun downloads, and you guys are listening, and we appreciate it.
All over the world, too.
We have...
Apologies to our UK. I may say some things about people in the UK.
I think we apologize a few times.
Their language.
UK, we love your gin. We love your Randy men and
ish.
Your pony boys.
Ish. I loved the food in the UK, which I think people don't tend to say about England, but I loved the food.
Oh, we have a favorite
in
place
England.
In London, which is right outside of Windsor Castle.
Yes.
We went to visit there.
Sure.
And our friend picks us up from the airport with his rambunctious six-year-old.
Took us to...
and we're jet-lagged.
Belle and the Dragon in Windsor.
Right outside. Well, the most miraculous thing was we drive up in this parking deck and get out. And like he's like, oh, yeah, we'll just go to Windsor for lunch. And we walk out through all these little shops and there's fucking Windsor Castle. And he's like, yeah, we'll just go down to this pub. It's cool. It's sitting right on the Thames. There are ducks. This pub's been around.
There were swans, and they were the queen's swans. And people were feeding them, which is apparently a violation of the law, but it's not enforced.
I had fish and chips. They were delicious.
Yeah, Belle and the Dragon. Next time we're overseas, we're going
back. Hey, England, you're doing it right.
It's been there since... Oh, well, I don't know.
No, it's 500 years or
crazy. The building has been a restaurant, yeah, since like the 1400s or something. I don't know that it was Belle and the Dragon for that long. But
now here's the Belle and the Dragon secret shout out. Anyway, not what we came to tell you about.
Thanks for indulging.
Do want to say, hey, thanks everybody for liking and rating and reviewing.
Yeah.
We have some stickers to send out. We've gotten some fantastic reviews on iTunes. So the Carroll sisters, Virginia podcaster Binger.
VA podcast Binger, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Laura Rebecca, Mechadonzilla, we want to know about you. Who
yeah.
are you? Send us an email to trashydivorces@gmail.com. Give us your address. I promise we're not stalkers. We're not Edward VIII. and we will send you some fun Trashy Divorces stickers. Thank you for your great reviews.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
And if you guys like, rate and review us and send a review, take a picture of it and send it to us at trashydivorces@gmail. We'll send you stickers too.
I can't tell you how thrilling it is to see that like people are leaving us positive review. Like, oh,
it's so much fun.
We're making something people like. It's really nice.
You
it's
like
really
us.
We really appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Go ahead and get a glass of wine.
Yeah,
now,
seriously, pour
because
poor big.
These are some great stories.
Oh my god.
Lucky number 7 is
in the bag.
In the bag and unexpected.
All right.
Here we go. Let's do this.
Enjoy.
Woo! Hey, Stacey.
Hey, Alicia. How you doing?
Oh, good. I'm so excited about this week.
I know you're so excited. I know
I'm so excited
about this
week. This
is so, like, this is so far up your alley that you're going to need to call the police and report a trespasser.
What?
This is,
you're
so
a funny joker today.
I've got one I think you're going to really, really like.
Talk to me.
This is one of the most famous trashy divorces, trashy marriages, weird. Like, this is Prince Charles and the Princess of Wales, Lady Diana Spencer. Yes. Yes, it is.
Let's do this. I'm so excited.
Oh my God. So
we're going to
start with Diana. This is, like, to be clear, nobody behaved great in this marriage, but like, I don't feel like there are a lot of villains. I just feel like there are a lot of people in a really fucked up life circumstance.
No villains, no heroes.
Yeah.
Human beings trying to do the best they can to get by.
Yeah. And also Diana's kind of a hero.
She's pretty badass.
She's pretty badass.
Pretty badass.
Okay. Diana Spencer. And the Spencers are old school British nobility. Old school.
Yeah, their British peerage goes back a while.
Yeah. So she was born in July of 1961 into a British noble family. She was the youngest daughter. This whole country. Hello, UK listeners. This is a whole country of people who can't spell things the way they're pronounced, by the way. By the way, UK listeners.
Would you like to apologize to our UK listeners now we do this story?
The Viscount and the... Who should be apologizing? I believe it's the British who can't spell.
Hey, in my Henry VIII story, I said dynasty. I did all the proper pronunciations.
You did. Viscount and the Viscountess Althorp. Or perhaps Althorp. I'm not sure.
Althorp.
Anyway, when Diana was 14, her father inherited the title Earl Spencer. And she became Lady Diana Spencer. And this is not how meritocracy works.
I mean, that would make you feel pretty fancy when you're 14 to be a lady.
I don't think it would, because here's the deal.
Okay.
Don't want to jump ahead. When she was young, the family lived at Park House in Sandringham, Norfolk.
Okay.
I'm sure I'm saying everything
wrong.
No,
you're doing this. This is all great.
This is... sort of near the beach north of London. I had to look it up on a map because I don't know where anything is. And the royal family holidayed nearby at Sandringham House.
Sure.
And so Diana and her siblings played with Prince Andrew and Prince Edward. They were right around her age, born in 1960 and 1964.
So some pretty cool playmates.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a rarefied circle.
It is
a rarefied life.
It is just, it's tough to picture, like, okay, kids, go out and play. I see the princes are over there. Like, why don't you go kick a ball around with the princelings or
Have
whatever.
Have fun with the princess storming the castle, kids.
Yeah. So in 1967, Diana's parents separated and then divorced.
Oh.
Right. And I think I read somewhere that, like, her mother ran off with another fella. I'm not sure. So Diana lived in London with her mom during the separation.
Okay.
She goes to see her dad back at Park House for Christmas.
Just a visit. Where are my presents, Joe?
Yup. Let's unwrap some stuff. Dude doesn't let her go back.
What?
Dad's like, you're mine. You're not going back.
He kidnaps her?
He basically kidnapped his daughter. Yeah.
For how long?
For, like, until she was old enough to move out. Like, he went to court. And, like, God, he's Earl Spencer.
So got the...
So, like, he goes to court and gets custody.
Sues back and gets custody? What does Diana do during this? Like,
she's
see you, Mom?
Living with Dad. Like, she moves to London eventually.
Oh, my God. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird. And then it gets worse. Like,
oh, good. Well, just wait.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, dad kidnaps his youngest daughter.
Oh, my God. Well, she has siblings, too. Did he kidnap them?
I think, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
Because while they are famous, I don't know the answer to that.
No, this makes my brain speculate wildly.
I'm also not like sure
if
of their age.
He's concerned about keep. Well, no, she's got a wide, like four siblings in a wide range. I think her brother is a little younger.
I think he's younger. Yeah, because there
but
was
like,
a.
If you didn't fight for all kids and just fought for the
right.
teenage daughter.
Right.
That's weird.
Yeah, potentially.
Okay,
creepy.
Something to investigate on a future Patreon episode one day.
Yeah.
Make
yeah.
a note.
Okay, so in 1976.
I'm sorry, I haven't even put my tinfoil hat on yet. Go ahead.
Okay, so 67, the parents separate and divorce. In 76, sure. he remarries a woman named Rain McCorkadale?
Okay.
I don't know. The Countess of Dartmouth.
Oh, of course she's
the Countess. The Countess. I said it wrong. The Countess of Dartmouth. I'm sure it's not Dartmouth. She, I believe you referred to her as Acid Rain.
That's
when we were talking
about. Yeah, she right. was apparently, as a stepmother, not a hit.
Yeah, not. Not
with
a
the
hit.
Kids, and they nicknamed her Acid Rain, if I'm not
yeah,
mistaken.
They...
And she's Rain with two N's, is that right?
No, it's Rain with an E on the
end. Oh, with an E on the end.
Yeah.
There you go.
So it could be... Anyway, it's Rain. It's fine. It's Rain. Spoiler, and this is how much Rain did not make a good impression on anyone in her new spouse's household.
Okay.
When Diana's father died in 1992...
Yeah.
Rain, who was the Dowager Countess, which American sure. audiences will know from yeah. Downton Abbey, she took off. She just left because all of her
ghosted.
Stepchildren hated her.
So really?
So she's out. And Diana, who at that point was the Princess of Wales, calls like the Althorp House or whatever and orders the household staff to unpack all of her clothes because she had packed everything into Spencer family suitcases with the Spencer emblem.
Nobody nope.
So Diana calls him up and is
oh
like,
oh my God.
Hey, Althorp employees, gonna need you to empty those suitcases and put them away. And you're just gonna stuff all of her shit into black trash bags. That is that.
You are kidding.
So there you go, stepmom.
Cold. Have some hefties.
Yeah. So
holy
in,
crap.
Yeah. So in 1990,
that's a trashy,
super trashy
death, that's
legit trashy.
Wow.
In 1977,
all pun intended.
Prince Charles
okay.
meets Diana because he was dating her older sister,
right.
the Lady Sarah Spencer. That relationship actually, for a minute, seemed to be going somewhere, and they went to like a Swiss ski resort for a weekend.
Oh.
And then something weird. So Sarah has lunch with a reporter friend.
Okay.
Things not to do. Like, I don't even know how... This is so, this would not happen today for
no, Sarah
obvious...
Sarah has lunch with a reporter friend after the Swiss weekend?
Mm-hmm. She's been dating Charles for a while.
No, Sarah.
Goes out to
Sarah
lunch
girl.
With a reporter from The Mirror.
Mm-mm.
And she just happened to mention that she would not marry Charles, quote, if he were the Dustman or the King of England.
Oh.
Weirdly... That phrase ended up printed in a newspaper, and
oh,
weirdly,
God.
Charles can read. So that oh. that ended.
Well, I mean, he's... Okay, I think...
Let me grab a drink of my canned
no, have
wine.
No, have a sip of your canned wine. Everyone dated Charles. Like, he was a
oh,
super
he...
eligible bachelor. It was like, I was at Woodstock. Of course I had a date with... The prince. Like,
right, no.
He was very out there with all sorts of sorts.
Everyone he could get his little paws on, honestly.
Exactly.
Which is part of why this story...
I can't hear the word paws without thinking about The Good Place now and Chidi and the chicks, the peeps, and the chili paws. Dig your paws on in my peep chili. Sorry.
All right. No, everything is...
The word paw is ruined for me.
I think that The Good Place is a wonderful contrast to this podcast.
It really is.
So, Charles and Sarah break up.
Well, yeah.
But, like, he's met Diana, who was 16 and therefore too young, you know.
Sure. Well, being held hostage in her father's home.
And being held hostage by the Earl Spencer. I don't even know. Anyway. In 1980, they meet again. And at this point, Charles is 13 years older.
Okay.
So at this point, they begin dating. Charles has apparently decided that at the age of 30, like, it's time for him to look at settling down, maybe have a few princes, whatever.
Sure.
Diana's other sister, Lady Jane Fellows, Lady Jane Spencer, before she married Mr. Fellows, Robert Fellows, played a role in this. So Jane had married the assistant private secretary to Queen Elizabeth II in 1978. Diana was a bridesmaid.
Indeed.
And in 1980, Jane and Robert were going to hop off to Balmoral, the Scottish castle.
Sure.
For, like, just for a getaway, I guess, house, like, royal staff has that option. And Charles was going to be there as well. So they were like, hey, Diana, why don't you hop in the back of the car?
We got a room in the back. Yeah.
We'll hop on up to Balmoral. I'm sure that's how they spoke as well.
I just realized after I said that how bad of a thing that was to say.
Oh, terrible.
Sorry.
That was terrible. I didn't even hear it either. But terrible thing to say. No more of that. So this was the weekend that the press learned that Charles and Diana were dating.
Okay.
And so this was when the press began stalking Diana.
Her.
Aggressively. And she's a kid. I mean, she's a kid. She's 18 or something. She's...
Now, let me ask you a question, because I don't want to bust this if you're going to cover it. But do you know why Charles began showing interest in her at that time?
Specifically? Mm-hmm. I don't. Do you?
I do.
Okay, tell me.
So it lends a little bit to the story.
Please.
Previous to this, because he was like eligible bachelor and everybody dated him, the love of his life, who I'm sure you're going to talk about.
Sure am.
She of the flower, Camilla. Camilla and Charles were a thing for a number of years before that. And she sort of put it on the line for him, like, dude, I don't know why she was unacceptable, but she was unacceptable. So she went off and married Park Bowles.
Right, Andrew.
And
I do cover all of this.
Oh, okay. But, like, he came after, like, he was so devastated by that's when he kind of decided, like, all right. So I don't know if it was a rebound thing, if it was a revenge thing, if he had to do his duty. Continue on with your story. I don't want to.
Thanks.
Go.
Thanks.
Go.
In February of 1981, Buckingham Palace announces the engagement of Charles and Diana. She was 19 years old. He was 32.
Jesus.
She was a kindergarten teacher at the time. She had finally, like, gotten out of her dad's house, moved to London. She had, like,
flatmates. Couldn't afford a slip.
She was living with a bunch of female friends. They were having a great day. Like, this was probably the only time in her life that she was actually happy.
It was the scene.
And then Charles comes along and ruins everything. So in July of that year, Diana turns 20 and also transmutes into the Princess of Wales through a marriage to her new husband, the Prince of Wales. I mean, think about this. Charles had been the Prince of Wales since 1958, like before she was even born. The UK and the world went completely bonkers about the fairy tale wedding of Charles and Diana. Charles's sister, Princess Anne, had married in 1973, but this was the first wedding of a future monarch since his mother's wedding in 1947, and it was the first time in more than three centuries that an English woman had married the first in line to the throne. That was Anne someone.
Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, but I've never thought about it that way.
Right. I was surprised to...
Huh.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess it's all the treaty marriages or whatever. 600,000 people turned out along the route to St. Paul's Cathedral to see them. 750 million people around the world tuned in.
I did.
I think my mom did.
I was there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not there, but...
No, I was in Anniston, Alabama, tuning in, watching it. No, I was here. I think I was here then.
In November Buckingham Palace announces that Diana is pregnant.
Doing the duty.
When she was about 12 weeks along in January, she and Charles were fighting and things were really not as fairy tale as everyone wanted them to be. She threw herself down a flight of stairs while pregnant.
Well, like that's one way to get attention.
Had to race to get a doctor and like just, it was bad. But Prince William was born uninjured in June.
Okay.
Prince Harry was born a little over 2 years later, September of 84. And Diana later said that her relationship with Charles was at its strongest during the pregnancy
popping
with Harry.
Stage. Sure.
Well, just specifically with Harry. I'm not really sure why, but I guess they were just together a lot during that time. And
well, I mean, Charles has to be feeling pretty good. He's got an heir and a spare.
Right.
Things are
well. He wanted
things
a
good.
He wanted a girl.
Oh.
And he was actually upset.
Disappointed? Well, that's the first time. He's such a weird dude.
He was upset. Well, he was...
I mean, good for Charles. That's great.
He was doubly upset because he wanted a girl and Harry was a boy. And Harry had all of the Spencer red hair. Like, he was a ginger.
Sure.
He was so Charles... Yeah, Charles was unimpressed. I think that's changed. I think he's been a good dad. Like,
oh, yeah,
I'm not trying... Yeah, I'm just...
Well, he really got put in a situation where he had to step up. Whether he wanted to be a good dad or not, like, it's... This is on you now.
And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he did always want to be a good dad. He maybe just... But yes, circumstances...
But I mean, can you imagine being in the rarefied world that you are a... You know that you're going to be the king of England from the second that you have awareness of what your day-to-day fucking life is like? Like, that is a really...
I really can't.
Interesting psyche to... And you don't have anyone to identify with, except maybe a parent who's doing the job, but you've got nannies. You see that parent for 45 minutes a day in tea time. You know,
well, he was like, apparently quite close to the Lord Mountbatten, his great uncle.
Yeah, who set up Elizabeth and Philip.
Who, it is thought, Mountbatten wanted Charles to court his granddaughter instead of... Not instead of, well, certainly instead of Camilla.
Sure.
Okay. Let's jump back in.
Oh, okay. Back
so,
in.
Okay. So to reiterate, Charles was 13 years older than Diana and had lived years of an adult life before he began courting his teenaged bride-to-be.
Playboy.
In 1970 or 71, when Diana was literally a child, Charles had dated a woman named Camilla Shand. But they broke up when Charles left for overseas duty with the Royal Navy in 1973. Later that year,
here we go.
Camilla married Andrew Parker Bowles and became Camilla Parker Bowles.
Correct.
Whom you've probably heard of on this podcast already. So there are a ton of theories as to why Charles and Camilla broke up from like palace intrigue stuff about...
Okay, talk to me.
Yeah. Mountbatten wanting... So yeah, Mountbatten... potentially sent Charles overseas, gave him duty to do overseas so that he might marry his granddaughter. The queen, it is thought, may have wanted Charles to marry a Spencer girl because she was close friends with the Lady Fermoy, their grandmother.
Yeah.
Others say maybe Charles...
Hey,
just
play bridge and like corgis. We're BFF.
Yeah, I mean, Charles maybe just wanted... to be older. He apparently got weird advice from great uncle Lord Mountbatten.
What advice did he get?
I think it went something like, Charles, as the Prince of Wales, I really can't do accents at all. But I think the is almost
Charles.
certainly accurate. Charles,
the Prince of Wales.
Basically, Mountbatten was like, "Look, dude, you're the future king of England.
Brew
you're
Prince.
In you're in no hurry
oh,
to get tied down. So you go nail everything that walks near you."
Which he did.
Get it. Yeah, he really did. Yeah. He was romantically linked with everyone who was anyone.
He's Woodstock. He is the Woodstock of England.
Yes. And his brothers were like 10 years younger than there was no competition. If you wanted a prince, Charles was it.
Free and easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently. But Mountbatten went on to say, however, when you do decide, to settle down, he told him to find a woman who was very, very young, who had not had these experiences, who could easily be placed upon a pedestal
and
kept on the pedestal, and stories would not emerge about.
Oh, scandal-free. You need a young virgin who is scandal-free.
Which is super gross, which is like setting everyone in this story up for catastrophic failure.
He apparently was familiar with the 500 years of British peerage before that. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, but...
So...
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, he was close to Mountbatten. When Charles learned that Camilla had become engaged to Andrew Parker Bowles, he wrote to Mountbatten and said, "I suppose the feeling of emptiness will pass eventually."
I know, he was brokenhearted.
Yeah, no, he was, yeah.
He loved her more than, like...
Yeah, well, and then in 79, Mountbatten was killed by the Irish Republican Army.
Yeah.
He was assassinated. And Charles and Camilla rekindled their romance with the approval of Andrew, of her husband, because he was also having all sorts of fun affairs. Like, apparently they had a totally open marriage for years.
Really? Well, because there's a thing about the British peerage, is there is a lot of fuckery going on between married couples.
Yeah, the rules don't apply.
Which everybody knows about and no one talks about.
Right.
Like, okay, we're going to get adjoining bedrooms in the country house retreat this weekend at Sandringham. And it's a thing. No one talks about it.
Yeah.
But everybody knows. I didn't know that Andrew was in on that.
He apparently...
I had no... That is brand new information for me.
Right. I think it was fine until it became a public scandal.
Oh.
As long as it was a private
affair. As long as it was quiet, nobody talked about it. Yeah. This is country house fun. Grab your gun.
And, I mean, I'm not sure. Like, it may be that he and Charles had known each... Like, Charles was grieving.
It's a... Yeah.
And so there... I'm sure...
Oh, go help him.
Yeah. I'm sure there was stuff to it. But it does sound like Andrew and Camilla basically had an open marriage.
Interesting.
Until Camillagate happened.
Those Brits are randy.
They're randy Brits. UK, we're on to you.
We're rooting for you.
So obviously Charles marries Diana 2 years later after the death of Mountbatten. And so, later Charles would claim that he only got back with Camilla in like the later 80s, I think, like after about 5 years of marriage.
Yeah,
liar. Yeah, when the marriage was irretrievably broken. That was his line later. But
no, he took Camilla to meet Diana and get Camilla's approval for her before he proposed.
Yeah, all this open marriaging thing, this was not how Diana rolled, apparently. Like, he was just having an affair.
How would you even have that experience in your head as a 19-year-old kindergarten teacher whose dad kidnapped?
Your dad's... But it's British nobility.
I mean, I guess. Yeah. Tricky.
All right. So, it was pretty clear that, you know, Camilla was his true love. And
for always and forever.
And Diana was his duty as the future king of England.
Always and forever.
So by about 86, 5 years or so into the marriage, Charles and Diana were pretty well done with each other.
Yeah.
So he gets back together with Camilla. I mean, that I'm air quoting here because it really does sound like they never were back together. Diana began having an affair with James Hewitt, who had been the riding instructor for the family. So Pony Boy, I think you've called him.
No, like Ponyboy, in whatever dynasty you happen to be in, Ponyboy gets all the action. I mean, you've got Elizabeth I and the Earl of Leicester, right? Ponyboy, he was the guard of her horse. Oh, Catherine Howard, the guard of her horse before that,
sure.
Henry VIII. So, like, dude, Ponyboy? Oh, fuck, Catherine Swinford? And the Tudor line and where it started when she married Owen Tudor? He was the fucking... like. Pony boy, yo.
I think mastery of large mammals is inherently sexy.
Pony boy.
All right.
Well, but if you're in charge of the, if you're the master of the horse, you're in charge of the games and the fun. And apparently British peerage does a lot of shit on horses. So.
Well, and also to be clear, like, I don't want to shortchange James. He was like a retired British army. He was a military.
Distinguished career. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not just that he was like a horse guy. There was more to it. Hewitt is a ginger. He's a ging. He's a redhead.
He does have a little bit of the ging.
And so there have always been rumors
for years
about Harry. But, like, according to Hewitt, according to the people close to Diana, like, people who would know. Harry was alive,
looks like Spencer, man.
Yeah, Harry was alive and in the world and, you know, a baby before. So, you'd need a TARDIS to make it happen. That's all I'm saying. Right. Also, James Hewitt is Doctor Who. No, the big reveal of trashy divorces. Anyway,
bigger on the
so the fifth Earl of Spencer back in the mid 19th century was known as the Red Earl because he had a long red beard. Like, it's genetic. It's in their genes.
Randy, I tell you.
Randy. So while her married life left a lot to be desired, Diana threw herself into charity work and ultimately became one of the most beloved figures in the world and known in England as the People's Princess. I'm told. I'm sitting over here in Atlanta, Georgia, USA, so...
No, she shook up the monarchy.
She really did.
Like,
I mean,
she...
Yeah, one of the... And this apparently upset the queen a bit, but she took a really early, like, public role in support of people with HIV and AIDS at a time when...
It's like 85, 86. Huge.
Yeah, at a time when they were... Yeah, when just being treated horribly by the medical establishment because everyone was terrified. Yeah. Like, no one understood the disease. You know, she was willing to, like... touch people who had AIDS and like hug people who like
no,
it was
that hospital visit where she visited an AIDS patient and held their hand was international.
I remember
press.
It yes I remember that
because you have an administration here in the U.S. with the Reagan administration who won't say the
won't
word
even say
who
the word.
Won't talk about it.
Yeah,
we've got hundreds of thousands of Americans dying from something that no like we're not even naming it. So here's, it was,
sure.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, it really, really was. And over the course of her life, she ended up opening, several centers, like in the U.S. even, like in the U.K. and in the U.S., as well as funding several groups to, like, do research. So she was, like, providing home, basically.
Yeah.
And service centers for people with HIV AIDS, and then funding research to, anyway, she remains an icon in the gay community to this day.
For good reason.
For very good reason. She also, leprosy.
Yeah.
Which was a bigger deal then, but like the British interest in India and parts of the developing world meant that, you know, as
the sun never sets.
As the sun never sets.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So leprosy is known as Hansen's disease today. And it's easily treated. And I'm not sure when...
There's so an bop, but a different joke going in my head,
I know,
which
right?
I'm not
right.
saying.
Anyway, there's an episode of this podcast Will Kill You that deals with leprosy / Hansen's disease. And I'm pretty sure it makes the point that only a very small subset of the population is susceptible to leprosy. Because she also freaked people out going to leper colonies and, you know, feeding
the most
people.
The photographed
and...
woman in the world that, yeah.
She was, she was an amazing
fearless.
Person. But also not susceptible.
And what's so funny is she lived with so much fear and like her public persona is so fearless.
Yeah.
It's really an irony.
Yeah. And toward the end of her life, she became a high profile advocate for landmines, mm-hmm. for landmine removal or,
it was a big deal.
Or banning them. It's still a big deal. Cause apparently it's just a thing. In the human condition, that when a child comes upon something kickable, they will kick it. And if that thing happens to be a landmine that was forgotten on the field, in the best case, that kid loses a leg.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's having a miserable life, although her two sons are great, and she dotes on them.
She's a great mom.
Takes them, travels with her, allows them to experience all kinds of things that princes normally wouldn't in the very archaic royal family.
I'm shooting down the log water slide at the park. Like,
yeah. Yeah, they got to have childhoods in a way that
most
other
royals did not.
Yeah. In 1992, the writer Andrew Morton published a book called Diana, Her True Story, which just outlined I mean, scandal. People just hadn't known how deeply unhappy she was. But also, like, it wasn't just that the royal family was not a great fit for her, but she couldn't leave and go outside because the paparazzi was there.
Yeah.
And she also couldn't go out and meet with Andrew Morton to provide him with interviews. So Morton had to write out his interview questions and smuggle them into Kensington Palace with a friend of Diana's and a tape recorder.
Oh my God.
And the friend would read her the questions and she would answer. And she just went, like, the tapes came out, I don't know, some years after her death, like in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And were fascinating. Like, we'll put that on the website. It's a long thing.
No, but they really, I guess I'd forgotten that part, that she's not even talking to her interviewer.
But
can you imagine your buddy comes over, like, with the list, you pop open a bottle of wine, and you're like, all right, here we go, let's talk about
it. But I mean, like, in so many ways, she was literally a prisoner in a gilded cage.
Gilded cage.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
She's, like, in Kensington Palace, can't leave, can't talk to who she wants, like, and we will find out, can't even make phone calls without those seemingly being intercepted by someone.
Mm-mm.
So Morton's book was seismic. It just...
No, it was a super big scandal.
Yeah, it made...
I think I have a copy, like, somewhere within this room, believe it or not.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it made huge waves. It exposed, like, Charles's affair with Camilla in particular became public. It also directly addressed Diana's mental health challenges. She had been suffering from bulimia from the time she became engaged to Charles.
Sure.
She did eventually get treatment for that. And I think, I mean, this so sucks. By the time of her death, I think she was in a much better place with all that.
Oh, she was really thriving. Her divorce from him, I think, really lifted her up. You see, on whatever night they made their first public appearance together, and she shows up in that hot, sexy dress with the tiara as a headband, looking like, psh, fuck you, motherfucker.
Oh, the revenge dress?
Yeah.
I saw that picture.
It's so good.
Okay, so with the book, the royal family closed ranks, as it does.
As it does.
And so the Queen and Prince Philip, her husband, not the King, the Queen and Prince Philip.
I'm not a fan of Philip.
They sit down with Charles and Diana and attempt to walk them through...
Negotiate a peace.
Reconciliation.
Sure.
To
hey guys, we've been married miserably for 60 years. Can we give you a few hot takes on how to get through this?
Yeah, let's save this marriage. Well, it didn't work. Okay.
Did your mom ever subscribe to Ladies' Home Journal? Like when you were young?
I mean, I recall, I don't know if she subscribed, but there were certainly, I remember seeing it in the house.
My grandmother did.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an article that happened in Ladies' Home Journal, Can This Marriage Be Saved? And I remember being obsessed with them when I was little, because my grandmother had, like, whatever, 28 years of Ladies' Home Journal sitting in her house. And that was always the article I would read. So they would tell you about Ted and Carol, and each had their side, and then you'd... I'm like six reading this shit. I haven't thought about that in 40 years, but something, can this marriage be saved? Let's talk to the Elizabeth and Philip about it.
And it could not.
Ladies Home Journal, represent you.
Okay, so here's where things start to...
Hilarious.
Things have been bad and off the rails. And she has, on a number of occasions, like, but she's been cutting herself. She may have attempted suicide at least once.
Not
like,
good.
It's been very bad. And then in 1992...
Divorce can sometimes be a good thing.
Yeah, the Sun newspaper published transcripts of phone calls between Diana and a close friend, James Gilby of the Gin Company.
Oh, yay,
Gilby
Gin.
That certainly sounded like they were having an affair.
England, we do like your gin.
Yeah,
And we like your pubs.
Well. But also, we like that you invented tonic, because we don't like your gin.
Again, Stacey, I don't know if you apologized to our UK listeners before the episode. Making a note.
Okay. The incident became known as Squidgygate, because that was Gilby's nickname for Diana. And to this day, there are real questions about whether British intelligence was behind the capture of the phone calls and their leak to the press, which routes back to Prince Philip. potentially. Like, there are a lot of question marks.
That guy is a shady fucking
cat. That's I think that
is a shady fucking cat.
I think that's the general agreement. Okay, let's talk about, like, no, my family's weirder than your family. Like, in December 1992,
okay,
the Prime Minister of England, John Major, announces to the House of Commons that Charles and Diana have separated. Like, obviously, they are the sovereigns of a nation, and it makes sense that the government would inform itself of... But, like, how fucking weird is that?
You think it's weird when you have to post your breakup on Facebook with all your mutual friends.
Right, I know. You change your status on Facebook,
Let's
and everybody's like,
Let's go ahead and give that to the Prime Minister.
My God.
In that rarefied world, man.
Yeah. So, the following year, Camilla Gate happens. This is an 8-minute recorded exchange of
Camilla Gate's just...
It was kind of gross, of a phone call between Charles and Camilla that was completely tawdry.
Okay, but I will say this, and I wanted to say it before we were talking about Charles.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he has an ounce of toxic masculinity about him.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that before.
Sure.
Like, it's weird being Prince since the first breath you've ever taken. It's a rarefied world. But he doesn't seem to me to be a... misogynist or an abuser of women. In fact, if you want to be your girlfriend's tampon, you probably like women in a much better way without any toxic masculinity included.
Yeah.
There's a little point for Charles.
Yeah.
Camillagate was gross.
Camillagate was pretty gross.
It was gross.
The British press has had subsequent, like, hacking scandals of cell phones.
Sure.
There was a case where someone, like a girl had died and there was something about sending text messages that made the parents think the girl had not died. It was
was
awful.
That's bad.
So this kind of thing is not like crazy out of the realm of norm, but the fact that like the royal family's calls were being intercepted, like rightly concerned.
The government. That's pretty.
In 1995, Diana sat for an interview with the BBC Current Affairs show Panorama, where she got very real about Camilla, self-harm, depression, and much more. Okay, the Queen hates all of the shit that's happening here.
Completely.
And I think you mentioned Sarah and Andrew.
Andrew separated in 96, divorced in 96. I think they separated 3 or 4 years before that.
Yeah, so all of the kids' marriages are falling apart. It's very public. It's very scandal-plagued. There are sex scandals happening everywhere. The Queen is so mad.
Oh, and Windsor Castle catches on fire.
Oh, even
that year. 92, like, it's shitty.
It's, bad, bad year. Anyway, upon...
can you do that in the microphone, buddy? Come on. Hi, Inman.
Inman want a cookie?
Inman want a divorce? Oh, okay, no, well, I got you. You can't come in here and do this shit.
All right, so after this broadcast airs, the Queen writes to Charles and Diana, who are separated. They've been separated for a few years. And the Queen tells them to get a fucking divorce already.
Really?
She's done. She is not going to try to save.
Marriage cannot be saved.
Marriage cannot be saved. My reputation will take less of a hit if you guys just get this fucking over with. And Diana, shut your fucking mouth. Like, you're free. Woo! So, and
I'm sure she probably did that too. Woo!
She probably did. Actually, this pissed her off too. Diana's like, cool. Let's sit down and negotiate terms.
Sure.
Charles is like, yeah. Yep.
Let's do this.
Woo! Charles had no terms. Charles just
wanted out.
Wanted out. Wanted to be with out. Camilla. The marriage was over. Didn't work.
Had Camilla's marriage ended by then as well?
They divorced, I think, in 95.
Okay, so it's dissolving at the same time.
Right.
Charles just wants his life back.
And yes, the life that he was never in charge of anyway, because he's the future king of England. Like, this sucks. It sucks to be him. And I think Camilla's ex-husband remarried a year later. So presumably he also had some sort of long-standing... Sure. Yeah. So the separation lasted about 4 years in total. The divorce was finalized on August 28th of 1996. And Diana's a savvy negotiator. She received a lump sum payment of 17 million pounds.
It's not a bad payday.
Plus 400,000 pounds annually.
Perfect.
Title-wise, she lost Her Royal Highness.
She lost HRH.
Okay, so there's titles and styles, and I'm probably getting this wrong, but for, like, for our American listeners who also don't understand how this works. So she lost Her Royal Highness, but she retained Princess of Wales. And as the mother of the future King of England, she remained a member of the royal family, which I don't think was probably the Queen's favorite thing, but whatever.
Hey, you're the King's mother. Like, that's a different bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sarah Ferguson, who, don't get excited, y'all, I'm not doing it this week, but the story's written. It's in the future because I love the story. Did not get that same consideration. Right. She was kicked out of the royal family. She had girls.
Right. Well, and they weren't technically in line to, or
they are.
Some,
they're 8th and 9th. Yeah, there's some. 9th and 10th. Yeah.
So during the separation, Diana had begun a relationship with a heart surgeon named Hasnat Khan.
Yeah, she did.
And the relationship went on for about 2 years. It seems like Khan ended it because Diana told friends how heartbroken she was when he had ended it.
Yeah.
At, I don't know. So again, she died a year after her divorce was finalized. So when at the inquest, this heart surgeon spoke and said that she had been the one to... So that's disputed. It's hard. It's not clear quite what happened. But a month after they broke up, she started seeing Dodi Fayyad,
sure.
Son of multi-trillionaire, yeah, Mohammed Al-Fayyad. And on August 31st of 97, Diana, Dodi, and their driver, Henri Paul, were killed in a car crash in a Paris tunnel. They were allegedly fleeing paparazzi at high speed, but there are also question marks around that because, weirdly, the tabloids in London... like, had gone to press before news that she had died broke. And the tabloids that day were they were, like, hyping new Squidgygate tapes. They were going off on, like, how much, like, public oxygen Diana was consuming.
Well,
and
like, the month before, she was on a boat with Dodi. So,
right.
And she would call the press, like, hey, we're going to be in the Cova Capri today, and I'm going to have a bikini on.
Right.
So, like, during this time, Charles, I don't know if he was on his first apology tour, whatever, but she was like, nah, I can take the press back. Dodi might have been a rebound guy from the heart doctor. Tin Hat, don't, like, necessarily have a thought on how committed they are with each other, but...
Prince Philip hated him.
Oh, well,
and I... was horrified by the idea that Diana might end up with him.
Hang tight, because I think Prince Philip hates his dad, because that comes back around again in my story.
Yeah.
But, like, she had been on a cruise the month before.
Right.
Sucking up oxygen of the world paparazzi with,
right.
Oh, is he giving her a ring?
Okay, so it's long been conspiracy theorist rumored that Prince Philip ordered MI5 to take Diana out.
Shady.
Obviously, Squidgygate 2, or whatever that scandal would have been, vanished.
Sure.
Upon her death. Like, but partly because the entire country went into profound mourning.
Yes.
And it was just, you weren't going to sell papers just publishing trash about Diana in the days after her death. Yes, Andrew and Camilla Parker Bowles divorced in 95.
Okay.
And once Charles was divorced, he made it clear to his family that his relationship with Camilla was non-negotiable.
I mean, he really does love her.
He really does love her. And
he really has loved her for a long, long time.
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, I mean, I don't want to... Diana was a conventionally beautiful, like, Diana had everything going for her. Camilla Parker Bowles perhaps is a little more plain.
Sure.
Apparently this drove Diana crazy during the marriage because she couldn't, like...
figure it out.
Yeah, but it's because Charles loved Camilla in a way that he just...
You love, you love.
Like, yeah.
Well, because Charles is a real looker too, so it's unusual to see two such stellar good-looking people together.
Sure. Sure. The royal family was just tired of having their name dragged through the mud. The queen was over it.
Done.
So I think the queen was just like, you know what?
This marriage can't be saved. Do it.
Charles and Camilla worked with a PR guy to try to rehabilitate their images over the next several years.
Yeah, he went on his apology tour.
And they, well, and they, like, for several years, they were sort of openly in a relationship, but they were very discreet in how they handled public events. Their first public appearance, like, together as a couple wasn't until 1999. And
3 years later.
Yeah, in 2000, she joined Charles in Scotland for, like, official, you know, royal business.
Sure.
So they really, took it very slow getting, like, getting Camilla on the public stage.
No, they worked on their apology tour for a long time.
Yeah. He did. The queen invited Camilla to her Golden Jubilee celebrations in 2002.
Oh, that was nice.
And so this is sort of seen as, like, the tacit approval of the relationship. In 2003, Camilla moved into Clarence House with Charles. And polls showed that the British public had become support. Like, I mean, what are you going to do? The dude's in love. She's in love with him. They've been together for years. They maybe shouldn't have been together during the marriage, but they were. Like, whatever. Sure. What are you going to do? You know, the public was all right. The family had survived this tragic loss of his children's mother. The monarchy had survived this very dark period, which I think there were questions about whether it would endure at all. And Charles and Camilla finally were allowed to marry in a civil ceremony on April 5th, 2005 at the Windsor Guildhall, which is around the corner from Windsor Castle. Neither set of parents attended the wedding, but Prince William and Camilla's son were there as witnesses. This is so fucked up. Okay, so Charles, aside from being king, will also be the supreme governor of the Church of England.
Sure.
When, if he ascends to the throne.
Yeah.
His mother may just live forever. We don't know. So to be able to remarry in the Church of England as the supreme governor of the Church of England, this poor dude had to get the approval of the Queen of England, who, you know, happened to be his mother, so that makes it a little easier. The government of the United Kingdom and the Church of England itself. Thank God we will never be royals.
Thank God.
As trash cans go, you know, I don't think this really tops a three, really. Like,
yeah, no villains, no hero. Like, everybody has their own.
The Diana self-harm sucks. Like, her unhappiness sucks. But I can't believe Charles was thrilled during the... Like, it just... They shouldn't have gotten... The family should have let him marry
Charles married Camilla in 75 and just lived the life that he wanted to live.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Like, who cares if she's a little plain and smoked cigarettes at the time? Like, that. Apparently that was what the queen didn't like about her.
Yeah,
like,
well, you know, it's little things.
Yeah. You can be with anyone, so... Find a supermodel who doesn't smoke.
Pretty sure every supermodel smokes.
Well, that's their food.
So not high on the garbage scale. High on the super trashy, though. It really was a scandal.
It was a huge scandal. And I have very clear memories of the night Diana died.
I know where I was.
Yeah. I mean, just super, super sad. So, yeah, there it is.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's take a break.
I learned a lot of stuff in that.
Cool.
Holy cat.
Cool. I'm glad you did.
I didn't know about the kidnapping.
Well, I mean, her father's a kidnapper. And then she kidnapped the suitcases back from her stepmother, Acid Rain.
Dude, I'm putting her shit in trash bags.
That was awesome. That's
amazing.
The term was bin liner, which I'm pretty sure in America is a trash bag.
Is a trash bag.
Cool. Cool.
And there's your homage to Charles and Diana.
There you go. Had to be done.
Let's take a break.
We'll take a break. Email us with anything that I got wrong, because I'm sure I hadn't looked into this in years, and so I'm sure I got plenty wrong.
That was awesome.
Anyway, we'll take a break. We'll get these pets who've been adding all sorts of background noises taken care of, and we'll be back soon. Sibling fights are unavoidable, but what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince William and Prince Harry. They were each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother, but that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties.
Wondery's podcast, Disentel, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started.
It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle, or was it something that started much earlier?
Follow Dis and Tell on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Alicia.
You ready?
Our theme ready? Is royals. So who do you have for us?
I would never be royal. Yeah. Okay, today I bring you the trashy divorce of Ernest and Wallace Simpson.
Okay, give me some context here. Who are these people?
Wallace Simpson is the twice-divorced American that Henry VIII abdicated the throne for.
Not Henry VIII.
I'm sorry, Edward VIII. Good catch.
This is a very confusing. There was no America in 15 whenever.
Sorry.
Okay, so Wallace Simpson.
Today's podcast twice has been brought to you by cocktails.
So, okay, I saw the King's Speech.
That is Edward VIII's brother.
Who assumes the throne.
After he abdicates.
But he was the spare and wasn't supposed to.
Correct.
And so then the famous British actor had to teach him how to talk.
Correct.
Cool. For World War II, there's going to be a lot in this story. I can already tell.
You're going to love it. Okay, so the trashy divorce of Ernest and Wallace Simpson.
Sure.
This is her husband who she has to get divorced from.
These are both Americans?
Ernest is half American, half Brit.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the trashy divorce, Ernest and Wallace.
Okay.
Or is it?
Or
I don't know if it's trashy or sad or tragic or where exactly the silver lining is, but here it goes. This is the tale of the original cage bird that does not get to escape. And this story is going to surprise you.
I can't wait.
So Wallace Warfield Simpson, also the Duchess of Windsor, has been portrayed as the Scarlet Woman or one half of the 20th century's greatest romance. She's vilified, like she's an American seductress.
Sure, we do that.
But is this actually the saddest story that you've never heard? Let me tell you.
Let me know.
Let me begin. The king who gave up his crown for the twice divorced American, who was a scandal of Christendom, it's different than you think it's going to be. December the 10th, 1936 is the day that Edward VIII abdicates the throne. He states in his radio address, it's very famous, like, I cannot assume this duty without the love and support of the woman I love.
Well, and at the time, and because this came up with Charles remarrying Camilla, I guess a reform happened after this in the Church of England. The head of the Church of England could not have, you can't marry a divorcee.
He's the head of the Church of England. He can't marry a divorcee.
Yes, he could not be the, what is it, Supreme General of the Church of England or whatever that was.
Supreme Governor. Head of the Church of England.
Supreme Governor. I forget what Charles's title was going to be.
Anyway, there are twists in this story. A few years ago, there's a secret cache of letters. 15 letters are found. Written between Wallace and Ernest, the man that she is divorcing so she can marry Edward VIII. She's still writing secret letters of love 2 years after marrying the king to Ernest. Like, are you ready to hear the story?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's unexpected.
Bessie Wallace Warfield is an American born in 1896. Her childhood was not great, and I think in a way guided some of the decisions she made later. Like, it's hard scrabble, but it's hard scrabble in rich people's houses. So she's born into a lot of money. Her father dies. Her mother's sort of dependent on rich relatives, Uncle Saul. Her mother eventually remarries and lives a pretty good life with a rich new stepdad. She goes to a fancy school, Oldfields. He dies, and the trust ends with him. So mom is back on hardscrabble luck with her rich relatives. Wallace wants to come out because that's her Warfield name. Like, she's got a hard scrabble, but a really good name. Uncle Saul's like, all right, I guess I'll give you your Deb.
I was going to say, come out as a Deb, not come out as a lesbian.
No, come out as a debutante.
Different times.
Which she does in Baltimore. She's really seeking security, and she does it, I think, through men. So she gets out of her Baltimore home. She marries a guy named Win Spencer, who on the surface looks a lot better than he is. He's a naval aviator. She marries at 19. She separates from him because he's kind of a louse. Like, he's abusive in a number of different ways, and it's a crap marriage. So she's like, yeah, okay, I know it's a scandal, but I'm done. And then she meets Ernest Simpson. She sets her cap.
What year is this, roughly?
This is 1927, okay. 1928.
So, yeah, very unusual for a woman to divorce.
Correct. Yeah. Both Ernest and his wife are separated. She really loves him. He is a half American, half English. He fought for the British in World War One. He's totally a nice dude. He's super kind. They both do get divorced in 1928. They're married. She really likes him. She's fond of him. He's kind. Like, this is sort
He's
of
a
the
good dude
fulfillment of something in her. And they are really very happily married for a number of years. Then they decide to move to London. Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
They buy a flat, and the two of them set out to climb society. It is their goal to make their name in London society, which is going to be that British peerage and
right.
that, you know,
right.
what you've talked about.
Sure. Rubbing elbows with the Spencers.
Wallace, through a mutual friend, connects with Thelma Furness, who is currently the mistress of Edward VIII. She's married. Thelma Furness is also the maternal aunt of Gloria Vanderbilt, who may feature in a future episode because there's some trashy divorces there. Edward VIII is a dashing prince. The British public loves him. I mean, he's like Charles, born being a prince since the day you were born.
Right. Is he king yet? Is it like, is he Edward VIII yet? Or
no, his
okay.
father
he's still
is
a prince. Okay.
still in charge. And, but he goes on world tours and shakes hands till his face, or
sure,
not face turns blue, his hand
sure.
turns blue. And anyway, he is frivolous. He's irresponsible. Wallace and Ernest get invited by Thelma's sister to a country house party in January of 1931. And there's Edward VIII. And Edward VIII likes talking to Wallace. He's very taken by
sure.
America and thinks she's kind of sassy. And she's apparently a brilliant conversationalist, where he is sort of a, I mean, we're going to get to that. He's kind of a dud. Like Cecil Barton, I think, said of her, she always returned the ball. She always, like, she was a, like,
nice, well
she's
phrased.
Sharp. She's yeah. wit. You know, she's, you really can. Mm-hmm. She's an unusual woman in an interesting time. Well, Wallace ends up, like, it's so crazy because she's kind of there, but he's fucking Thelma Furness, and it's fine. That's what apparently monarchy does, is
right.
has affairs with married women.
Right.
And everybody knows about it. Nobody talks about it.
And I bet the presumption was that an American, and particularly a divorced American, perhaps had perhaps her morality was very in line with the peerage's morality.
Well, but not yet. So they're
no,
fine.
I'm just saying, like, that may have been the assumption.
Yeah. She and Ernest, Wallace and Ernest, chatted up at a number of different country parties. And in 1934, Thelma Furness has to head on over to America and says, hey, Wallace, I got a big favor to ask you. Do you mind looking after my little man?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Wallace even writes to her aunt about this.
No.
Says, like, this is hilarious. I'm at comedic relief. Thelma's going to come back. Like, it's fine, but this is where I've been and who I've seen.
A babysitting the future king of England. It's very fun.
Well, by the time Thelma comes back, they all have lunch together, and Wallace does something with his lettuce. And Thelma instantly knows, like, oh, she is no longer the prince's girl, Wallace's. Edward breaks it off with all, because he's got not just Thelma Furness, but a few other married
right.
women, you know, mistresses.
Right.
He breaks all of them off. Edward invites Wallace to join a holiday party in the south of France on the boat. So there's Wallace. There's Ernest. Like, everybody's cool at the end of this trip.
Is it the Royal Yacht Britannia?
No.
Okay.
This is secret. Like, this is this is his...
This is private boat?
Private boat. At the end of that trip, Edward slips a Cartier diamond and sapphire charm around her, you know. She ends up starting to accumulate a fortune in precious stones, and just put a pin in that because it's going to come back around.
Okay.
Actually, on this trip, Ernest is back in the flat, back in London. She's writing to him like she's been in Peter Pan's Neverland. And he's doing great from this. Edward VIII, Prince of Wales, has a special tweed woven for him, and he gives the leftover tweed to Ernest. Edward opens the door for him to join the Masonic Lodge. Gives them entree to all of his rich friends. Like, Wallace and Ernest are playing as a team for their own enjoyment and profit.
Trying to climb the society in London.
Like, he knows he's a cuckold, but they are a cuckold couple with a purpose to set their... Like, this is all a plan. Like, for mistresses, there are rules, and the husband needs to be in on it, right? Married ladies, or who you fuck, everybody knows what's up. Everybody gets adjoining rooms. The husband is the cover. Appearance means more than anything. People did the same with Camilla. Wallace understands the nature of this game, and she is fully convinced she's going to ride this wave out of largesse and entree, and Edward's going to be taken by a newer, younger model, right? Like, she's almost 40. She's middle fucking age. She's on the shelf in America.
Right.
And thinks, she's going to get it while you can.
Yeah.
I'm going to play the game while I can.
Yep.
Ernest even writes to his mom about how all of this is happening, where they're going. Like, they are really, like, you don't hear about this. You hear the king leaving the throne for the woman he loves, and it's the greatest love story of all time.
Right, right. Sacrifice and blah, blah, blah.
Playing a fucking game.
Right.
So in 1935, Edward really starts showing extraordinary attention to Wallace. Like, something flips in his brain. Love letters that are just simply embarrassing. Infantile. A boy loves a girl, and it's all very... Like, it's six-year-olds writing to... Like, it is weird. And when will we be one? And this is when they adopt what he calls the royal we. Because she's Wallace and he's Edward, so if you put them together...
It's very clever.
The royal we. So she responds appropriately, like, I'm not going to stop this attention from you, but he is blinded by the Wallace. He's nuts. He thought she was the most supreme woman that ever existed. She's witty and intelligent. She also treats him with sort of a disrespect that no English girl would ever do. Like, she's on.
That must be exciting, though.
It's for him.
Yeah.
It is apparently his I can't keep my penis in my pants titillation point. Wallace doesn't care. As long as she's riding high, the worse she behaves, and she starts to, the more he wants her. Like, it is all fucked. She's like, okay, now this is getting weird. Let me do some, oh no, it's obsession. Okay. In 1935, he invites her again on summer holiday on his boat touring around the south of France. By that time, Wallace is running the show on the boat. She's sending bossy notes to him. This is the longest holiday period of separation from Ernest. Okay. And he ends up going back to America and visiting her Aunt Bessie. Ernest says to Bessie, like, this game is done. Like, I'm... This has got to end. Like, things are shifting and it's not cool. I was fine playing the game, but now it's become something very different than what it is. Wallace, in feeling so bad for poor Ernest, back from her days at Oldfields, from her boarding school days. She was friends with this really sweet gal named Mary Kirk.
No.
Who's in New York. And she's like, Ernest, you're in New York. My friend Mary Kirk's in New York. Hey, Mary.
No.
Can you keep my little man occupied?
Oh, my God.
Right? It all comes back around. So she calls Mary Kirk, can you keep, you know, can you entertain him? And believe it or not, Mary and Ernest get along pretty well. And when Wallace returns back on his boat, they meet back up and begin their affair. So imagine Wallace is cavorting with the future king of England and France. Her husband is overseas having an affair with her friend that she's like, hey, could you like play bridge with him and make sure he's not lonely? All of this has gone, like it has spiraled out of their control. It's gone way too far.
Yeah.
So here's where the universe steps in and shakes it up. In January of 1936, George V dies. That's Edward's father.
That's Edward's dad, yeah.
So Edward, the Prince of Wales, is now the king and the supreme head of the Church of England, which forbids marriage to a divorcee.
Sure.
So now he's stumped. He's been able to defer this choice, right, for a lot of years.
Right.
He's now grown into he's not in his 20s anymore. He is older. Like, there's a dynasty to consider. Wallace is like, fuck yes, this is great. Woohoo! I'm done with him.
Oh, she thinks she's finally free. Okay.
It's time for him to do his job.
Right.
Great. This is,
yeah.
I am nothing compared to the duty that he has.
Sure, and your next brother stutters, so he can't possibly be king.
Couldn't ever possibly. So she's excited, like, yeah, he's going to go do his job. But he gets crazier. He gets stalkier about her. Put Precious in the fucking basket. Stalkier. He's unable to do anything without her there. His obsession becomes like 100%. He can't do shit without Wallace. So this is like in The Crown.
Yeah.
Where
Albert,
the younger brother, and the queen mum before she's the queen mum are like, like, it's not, like, Wallace is being put in, because you don't say no to a
to the king, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, by spring, he's obsessed. He's talking marriage.
Wow.
Yeah. His adoration kind of puts her at the peak of society. Like, I don't even know just what I said.
Society? Impossible.
His adoration puts her at the peak of society. It's exciting. She's got a lot of access. But by this time, Ernest is done. This is spring of 37. Ernest is done. And Ernest goes to Edward, man to man, and says,
I mean, all of this started back in 31. So
that's when they met. They started their affair in 34.
So, yeah. So this is,
so three years later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once Wallace, like, he's
not going
anywhere.
And the king wants to marry your wife, like.
Well, Ernest goes to the king, and he's like, listen, are you going to marry her? And Edward says, do you think I would be king of England without her by my side?
Oh, Jesus.
Right? And Ernest is like, all right. Well, keep in mind, he's doing his little dalliance.
Got a thing on the side. Yeah.
So,
but do you blame him? I mean, I don't.
No, you don't. So he agrees to a divorce. In May, Mary Kirk...
Ernest's
girlfriend, invites herself to come on over and stay in the Simpson flat.
Yeah.
Wallace is furious.
Oh, is she?
Yeah. Accuses Mary of seducing Ernest. Like, you got a lot of damn gall to seduce my husband.
Where does she find the time to be mad?
When you're sitting on a boat with the...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
South of France with the future king and current king and whatever.
Mary and Wallace fight. Mary leaves, never speaks to Wallace again.
Good.
At the fateful decision is made that she will submit to a divorce from Ernest to marry Edward. But like, it is all like hands bound. Nobody wants to do this. She's 40. She thinks it's her last chance to achieve something. Like, maybe she's Queen Wallace, which is unthinkable. But Ernest, being the good chap that he is, agrees to start the way you get a divorce in England in those days, which is being caught at a hotel with someone who's not your wife. You have to produce evidence of adultery.
Sure, sure.
So this is set up and planned. This is my very favorite. Anytime I ever want to check in a hotel under an assumed name, I'm going to do it under this name because I love it. They find Ernest with Buttercup Kennedy.
Oh, my God.
Buttercup Kennedy, which later, from Mary Kirk's diary, is Mary Kirk, but Buttercup Kennedy.
You know, fun fact.
Tell me, Buttercup Kennedy.
That remained, like, the standard for proving adultery in the United States, in the state of New York, until, I think, 2010 is when they reformed. Wow. But, yeah, you, like, the divorce industry there was rife with fraud because people would basically do that. They would go to hotel rooms and take pictures of themselves with someone, not their wife. And
Buttercup Kennedy.
And then, like, give the wife the pictures to show in court so that they could get divorced.
Best fucking poor name ever.
Terrible. Buttercup Kennedy. Okay.
Buttercup Kennedy. So, Mary Kirk's secret diary is found, which she writes, like, Wallace is really manipulating and use, like, Wallace knows about this. Right. Like, this is all...
This is how you
Mary blames Wallace. Ernest blames Edward. Like, Ernest says they never had an unhappy moment until this. Like, they really were the happiest couple in the world.
Yeah, Team Simpson or whatever.
Team Simpson. There's no alimony. The divorce is planned for October. They're trying to keep this, like, collusion out of it. Because if they find out, they've all colluded about how they're all arranging this.
Right, and that's why the fraud was rife, yeah.
Exactly. Evidence of complicity, it disallows the divorce. So Wallace, Jesus Christ, goes on a third summer holiday, cruising on the Dalmatian coast this time. And on the way home from this holiday, she stops in Paris, where she happens to pick up a whole fat pack of letters from Aunt Bessie over in America, overflowing with press clippings from America and Europe about their fucking affair and how she's fucking the King of England
and what
the hell is going on. None of this has hit the British press.
Right, okay. Oh, okay.
Like, this
They're
is summer
keeping
of
30, it.
Like, none of it, or I'm sorry, summer of 36, none of this is in England.
Right.
The paparazzi are locked down by the royal family.
Sure.
But here comes Wallace in Paris. Oh, let me go visit my friend Cole fucking Porter. See some Cecil Barton. Like, it's going to be fun. I'll go to see Coco Chanel. Oh, shit. No, Aunt Bessie's pissed.
Yeah.
Aunt Bessie has sent her a fucking howler. paparazzi clippings that she's been saving. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Holy crap. So this is an enormous scandal. She writes to Edward, like, dude, I have to go back to Ernest. I get along with him. I want you to be happy. I can't make you happy, Edward. Tells him goodbye. She's done. She breaks it off. Edward is crushed. He wants to slit his throat. He can't contemplate living without her. There's no going back. Dude, he's creeper boy.
Yeah.
There's no going back. Like, and poor Wallace, like, continues to try to... So in October, she moves to a rented house to await the divorce. Ernest moves out of their flat. He writes Wallace, like, this letter, like, I have no tears left. I hope that you keep your flame burning for me. You know, all we've shared is so amazing. I hope God brings you back, but I'm done. Like, I get that I'm lost. She's been the king's mistress for 2 years, right? She writes him 2 days before the divorce that she doesn't understand. It's herself which is the cause of all the misery, and I'm so lonely, and I'm so trapped. Like, they're about to head to court to get divorced, and both of them are like, this is absolutely the worst thing that we have ever done, but we are being played by the puppet strings of the king's wishes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he writes her back, would your life have been the same had you broken it off? You're, you know, settling for this, and he really gets that she's got turmoil and an empty future in front of her and feels sorry for her, but he's done.
Okay.
They get the divorce.
Yeah.
She's rushed off to France because now that, like, the divorce decree takes a while to go through, but now that it's filed and done, Edward wants Wallace out of the country. So he gets his chauffeur.
Why?
Just out of the, because the, now England knows about it.
Okay.
Now it's broken.
Okay.
And this is all any, it is every press, it is everything. Now she is a sensation in England and the press is too hot.
Right. So, because she's divorced and he's the king. And so.
Twice divorced.
Well, but, yeah. But she, like when she was married, I guess there was some.
But now she's filing for
divorce.
She's
not, yeah, she's not married anymore.
She's filing to divorce as it hits the press.
Yeah.
So the king sends his chauffeur to get her the fuck out of the country. The paparazzi's following her even then. Mm-hmm. She's got a blanket over her head in the back of the car. She ends up going off to France December 6th, so 4 days.
Sorry, your dog is snoring on my lap.
4 days before the abdication, she talks to him and begs him not to abdicate. Like, do not do this. Stay king, man. It's cool. Like, you do not need to do this for me. It's fine. She sends a letter to the British government. Mrs. Simpson is not going to marry the king. Like, she is still, to this day, doing everything she can.
Right. To save his kingship, right?
Yeah. And the king's never going to let her go. And through this time, she really discovers that the man she's divorcing is the man that she really loves. But she's in Cannes, and she hears on the radio his abdication speech, and she weeps. Like, she's distraught. Like, you've got... Fuck.
So he didn't run it by her.
No. Nah.
He just nope. did... Wow.
Yeah.
Grand gesture, or whatever.
Divorce law says they can't be seen together for 4 months. The... King now, he's abdicated. So, he's the Duke of Windsor now. They created a title for
sure,
him.
Sure.
He goes to Austria. She's chilling in France. She's lonely. She's still writing to Ernest.
Right.
Like, regretting all of this. They call him Peter Pan. Like, he's a child. He's never going to grow up. Like,
yeah.
How is this? Anyway, the divorce decree comes through in late February. She moves from Cannes to the Loire Valley. Edward joins her May 12th. 1937, George is coronated, his brother.
Sure's brother.
She's still writing to Ernest about this happening. June the 3rd, Edward and Wallace are finally married in France. No one from the royal family attended, not even Louis Mountbatten. Jaws! Cecil Beaton photographs. Wallace is in her what the color they call Wallace blue, which is really famous.
Like, let me run this concept by you.
It's just sad. It gets sadder from here.
That generation of the royal family just like produced a fuckboy of an heir who, once he had any responsibility, figured out a way to avoid it.
Kinda. Yeah.
Cool. Well played.
Well, and I mean, this is the, and this is sort of the end, but it changes the face of the British monarchy.
Yeah.
Right? Because here comes Bertie.
Yeah.
Who's never been trained, who's the, I'm sitting in the back.
Yeah, I can barely speak.
But married to a very nice girl. And
definitely.
Has two very nice kids.
Yeah.
And they do their royal thing as they do, but whoa, wait a minute. And now his daughter, I mean, it's Henry VIII and, like, it's just, it's fascinating how this changes the monarchy. Wallace Simpson changes the monarchy in a breath of fresh air way. Like, it's his stupid decision. It's not her, but like
right.
The same way Diana did. They were both cataclysmic shifts.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like
the monarchy worked.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like this sucks for her. Like, she got stuck.
Oh, get I mean, so the, suckier.
The
Hold
dude's
on.
Super rich, but he sounds worthless.
Hold on. So they are married. Wallace Blue, like Cecil Beaton's there. They have some hangers on. Here's the saddest thing, like apropos to nothing, but they really love dogs, pugs and terriers, which they have. There's a favorite terrier, Slipper, that was with Wallace all throughout the proceedings for the abdication, who ends up getting bitten by a viper a few days before the ceremony and dies. So all Wallace remembers is being really sad and crying. That the one, right? I didn't mean to make you cry about Slipper, but Slipper.
Like, this story sucks.
This story sucks. So it doesn't suck for Ernest, because Ernest
really?
Is like, Ernest Simpson marries Mary Kirk in November of 1937. So they end up marrying and they stay
Where do they make
until
their
she
home?
Dies.
Do they live in London or New York?
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll put it in Patreon. I don't know. I'm sorry. I should.
I guess I would not stay in London if, you know,
well,
if I were part of causing a king to abdicate.
Yeah, it's probably pretty hot. Even 2 years after she's married Edward, she's still writing to Ernest about pride pushing her over the cliff. And this is
God,
the
and his
Hold
new
on.
Wife must love this.
Well, this is I can't imagine he showed this to Mary. I shan't write about it again. It is painful and it is too late. Wherever you are, you can be sure that never a day goes by without some hour's thought of you and for you. And again in my evening prayers at night. With love, Wallace. She's so miserable. Is this the last letter that's like this? This is in 1938. It sort of closes the chapter.
Okay.
Mary's diagnosed with cancer.
Jesus Christ.
Like, she dies at 45. He marries again, and Ernest marries again.
Right.
And that marriage lasts until his death.
When does he die? Do you know?
Much later. He lived a very long and happy life with a very long fourth marriage. And
okay.
Ernest comes out okay.
But he and Wallace, because I know Wallace outlived Edward.
Wallace does outlive Edward.
But she never ended up with... with Ernest
again.
She
never marries okay. again. Wallace and Edward are together until Edward's death in May of 1972.
So that's 40 years. Yeah.
They were married a very long time. They projected an image to the world that they were the absolutely most happy couple.
Hmm.
There's an interesting video I will post where they're on... Meet the Nation, or like they're on something in the 50s, and
yeah,
she's patting his hair. Like, she is very much all about appearances, right? Hardscrabble kid living
sure,
in a rich house.
Sure.
Even when she debbed, Uncle Saul wasn't going to front the money for a number of dresses, so they bought a handful of dresses, and her mom would go home, rip them up, and like re-sew them every night, so she had a different dress to appear at a function.
Right, right.
So. Appearance is everything. Wallace lives until 1989. I'm sorry, 1987, I think. Survives him by 14 years.
Yeah.
But her
yeah.
last 10 years were spent in their home in Paris. She was bedridden. Like, couldn't really talk, couldn't speak. Like, duty is the word of this story. And he, like you said, sort of absconded his
yeah,
duty.
No, he's... bullshit.
But her duty, she's still stuck with him. And like, be careful what you wish for. You made your bed. He doted and depended on her, followed her around like a dog, seriously, until his death. And she was never obsessed by him. Like, her love was earnest and she got it. Like, is this the greatest love story that, like, we think the great love story is them? It's not. It's
yeah.
so sad. Earnest love might have been more rewarding. So... you know, what does she throw it away for?
Yeah, like some fuck boy who...
when the king sets his... it's Catherine Howard. It's Anne Boleyn. Like, it's Mary Carey. Like, when you're king... when the king's out for you...
you know what?
You don't say no.
She's a fucking American.
She could have said no.
She didn't get on a fucking boat. Or at that point, I don't know about planes then, but... she didn't get on a fucking boat and be done with him. She's
okay.
an American. We do it.
So,
I'm sorry,
no,
UK listeners.
I mean, it is. It's the saddest story. So,
well, it just sounds like he kind of sucks.
Oh no, he sucks so bad. Hold
Although
on.
It does sound like they had a basically happy relationship. I mean,
no, they didn't. She was fairly miserable, and he was fairly miserable. And I have some stories to tell you about what a dud she fucking married. Which is why I think Charles and Camilla are perfect. They like to garden and
yeah,
ride horses.
That's
they
exactly.
They share
it.
The same boring. Fucking hobbies. Like,
yep.
you guys, like, you're peas in a pod. Okay, so hold on. I became obsessed with this story at a very young age because my grandmother was one who thought that this was the greatest love, like,
sure.
left his throne for
right.
the love of his life. Dominic Dunn, in his book Mansions of Limbo, writes about after the Duchess of Windsor passes away, her jewels being auctioned in 1987. This was a big fucking deal. It happens in Geneva. Sotheby's has
this
the
is
auction.
This is Wallace Simpson. Is the Duchess of
Wallace,
Windsor.
Wallace Simpson is they made the up, Duchess of Windsor.
They made up
oh,
a Duke of Windsor.
But she did not get the HRH title either.
Sure.
Like, Edward totally wanted her to be HRH, and they were like,
no.
Nope. Sorry. So, her jewels, because this is what's happened. Her jewels, he's given her jewels
oh,
every
right, right.
time.
Oh, right, right, the Cartier.
Take a pin out of the...
Yeah, yeah.
The Flamingo pin, the Prince of Wales pin. Like, these jewels, there's a video of them. They are fucking magnificent. They are appraised for about $7 million and touted for about 6 months before the auction happens. And this, I think, in 1987 really does change the conversation and where the myth gets created about their story. The Dominic Dunn story in Mansions of Limbo is amazing about this. This auction raises $50 million. It is like...
On $7 million for the jewelry?
It is an auction that stunned the world. It gave Sotheby's enough to computerize and expand their operation.
Hmm.
So they're like a $2 billion. This is what... Okay, so it is scandal. There, Elizabeth Taylor is bidding on the phone for the Prince of Wales brooch from California. Like, you don't even see half the bidders. Some of the royal family apparently bid on these jewels as well.
I'm sure.
Okay, so again, apropos to nothing, like a slipper. I just find weird shit that I have to tell you. The home they lived in Paris is... So they, in the last years of their life, there's a home that is owned by the city of Paris that they end up renting. And it is, there's a video of it. I'll post to it. They take you on a tour through it all because Mohammed Al-Fayed
Doty's.
Bought it, yes, after the Duchess's death.
Wow.
Diana and Doty actually went there the day before they died in Paris. It's one of the first places they stopped.
Wow.
Because Mohammed Al-Fayed set it up as he lovingly restored every pant, every napkin, every pair of underwear, every tablecloth, every dish, everything in that home and set it up just the way they had it as a tribute to them. And this video is legit fascinating to look at and walk through and look at what mementos of a royal life you keep. Like, there's a garbage can they used that you can tell it was given to Prince Edward from the Boy Scouts of some troop in the Madison Square Scouts in 1921. But it's like a pelted leather trash can that's still, like, it is a, there's an Andy Warhol print, Cecil Beaton art. It's amazing. Mohammed Al-Fayed buys this, restores it immaculately. It's set up as a tribute in 1988. Eventually, he sells the possessions here, and proceeds are donated after the death of his son and Diana to charities supported by his foundation for his son and charities supported by Diana.
Mm-hmm.
In that same video, apparently, I bet you can't even guess, Edward VIII's lit exciting hobby. The king aimless with no purpose fucking likes to embroider. There are all of his pillows where he spends all of his time embroidering.
The word dud comes to mind.
I mean, and he says, like, this is the hobby he doesn't think it would be great for people to know he has. Like, seriously, all of his stuff is there, his suits, his socks, 12,000 photos in the tub. Because in his bathroom, he doesn't use the tub, but he does use this very astute little weird shower. So why not use the tub to bring you joy for your 12,000 tiny little photos?
Wait, you mean he just had a bathtub full of
photos.
Photographs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, spark joy, man. So I am certain Wallace was thrilled with the dud that she married. Her later letters very much have her describing being trapped with a useless man.
Yeah, really. I'm
and
shocked.
The irony, right? It's her marriage to him that made him that way. He wanted her and not the duty of being a king, and now he is unoccupied and miserable.
Right. Idle rich.
And his abdication changes the way the entire Windsor dynasty rolls out. It's sad, right? I'm sorry, I'm going to let you react to the sad part of the story, but before I tell you where it comes back around again to Diana, and you're going to like it.
Okay.
Wallace has no heir. They have no kids. So yeah, the Duke of Windsor title dies with Edward.
I mean, fuck that. Who'd want it?
Maitre Bloom.
He was a Nazi sympathizer too, right? That's something I've always heard. Like, it's a good thing he bailed, because
once he got booted out of England, he did go on a trip to Germany. There are a number of different stories about this, which is not the point of Trashy Divorces.
Sure.
That's our alternate podcast.
Sure.
Tin foil hat, fashionable and functional too. Conspiracy time.
Sure.
Yes and no. Like, his whole family's German. They're the Saxe-Gotha Gottsburgs. The whole Windsor's a, anyway, not the Wallace has no heir.
Sure.
And Maitre Bloom is the woman who cares for her the last years of her life. And as Wallace has no heirs, she suggests the Pasteur Institute is the place to leave her assets. So after this auction of $50 million for all of her jewels from the gilded cage that the prince gave her, the Pasteur Institute in 1987 receives $45 million from that auction. And the Pasteur Institute is the leading French institution working on a cure for AIDS.
Right, right.
So right at the time, Diana is reaching out to make AIDS a thing. Here, Wallace comes back around in a secret surprise from history, landing her millions with the Pasteur Institute, which actually does legitimately advance research.
Right. No, I think
for the epidemic.
I think for years, the Pasteur Institute and an American, I'm not sure, I assume it was a university, were in a dispute over who had first identified the HIV virus.
Like, we found it. Let's just do something about it.
Right.
Who needs, come on. Anyway, that's my sad story. Is it, it's not the story you think it is.
No.
You hear this, oh, it's the greatest love story of the 20th century.
No.
And she did everything she could to be like, oh, I'm out, man. I'm out.
Well, no, and he was every bit the trash bag that Diana had her stepmother's clothes stuffed into. Like,
kinda.
Yeah.
I mean, and she's appearances. She rules his life. Like, she's making dinner menus, and they... like, they very much have a very efficient life that they do. But what a crappy gilded cage to live in.
Yeah, no, it sounds like all of this sounds terrible.
So there's the story you didn't know behind the story you thought you did of the trashy divorce of Wallace and Ernest Simpson.
Hmm. And another thing I learned in all of this is that, so Dodi Fayyad.
Yeah.
And his father, Muhammad Al-Fayyad, are related to Jamil Khashoggi. I think Dodi is...
his cousin, right?
Khashoggi's cousin. Yeah, this was the Washington Post journalist who was murdered by the Saudi government last year. Anyway, yeah, I think Muhammad's first wife was Khashoggi's aunt, which makes Dodi his cousin. It's something... but I know you've got this sort of general view that there are like 12 or 15 families that secretly run the world. And I have to say,
my tin hat has been made by Coco Chanel.
Because I'm pretty sure that Muhammad really wanted his son to marry Diana.
Well, and wonder,
be the stepfather to the future King of England.
Right. Because there's some, like in your conspiracy thing with Diana, there is some merit to... I mean, the royal family really hates Muhammad Al-Fayyad.
Right, and he's an Egyptian businessman.
But you look at 10 years earlier,
but he's also
he buys
like,
all the possessions of your abdicated king.
Yeah.
The uncle who absconded and the mistress who set the world on fire.
How did they let that happen?
I don't know.
Like, that's pretty...
well, because they figured all that stuff was coming up lock, stock, and barrel. Like, it would get auctioned off like her jewels. And he came in and bought the
whole thing
and lovingly restored it.
Yeah, they're richer than God. They could have swooped in and taken all. And I'm surprised they didn't.
I don't know.
That's very...
we will never have the problems of royals.
Right. Because we're with Lord on this one.
Yeah, we're just happy cats leave some furniture not ripped.
Kinda.
That's why we don't have nice things.
On a long enough timeline.
Our cats are not well-behaved enough to be royal. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed the trashy royal divorces of Charles and Di.
Like, not satisfied. So, I got that being royal sucks. That's my takeaway from
it is a rarefied
today's episode.
Life that I think, unless, like, I don't know if I'd want it.
Yeah, me either.
I'm good. Or even to be a hanger-on. It's fine.
I think especially to be a hanger, like, no.
No, but when you're gaming the system, to find your own entree in and it ends up, boom.
Yeah, it blew up in our
destroying
face.
Destroying the happiest love you've ever had. Like, God, it's sad. It's the story. Like, it's the story you don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, stay single.
Yeah.
Stay out of the king's way.
Seriously, avoid royals. Jeez.
If he's the king, just go. Just go. Hide in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Find Pony Boy to fuck with. He's going to be way more fun.
Actually, it seems like Pony Boys are important to royal families.
Hey, but Pony Boys are the... way more fun than fucking a dude who embroiders. Sorry for all men who embroider. I'm sure it's a fun hobby.
You just gendered the fuck out of that.
I really did.
All right. Well, that's trashy divorces for this week. Thank God we'll never be royals. What a mess.
I'll just keep driving Cadillacs in my dreams.
Yep. Do it. Do it.
Talk to you next week with another
trashy
super
divorces.
Lit, trashy can on fire divorce. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers. Bye.
And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's Store on Instagram, and definitely drop into Ratsy's Store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com or find us on the World Wide Web at trashydivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.